What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Target Table. Today on the couch, we had Fred Shibesta from Finder.com. We got to unpack what he felt like as a creative type individual and as a creative entrepreneur behind the scenes of a financial company. I walked away from this absolutely buzzing. I hope you walk away from this buzzing. Enjoy.
I think for you, like when we were looking at like the origins of Finder and how that came to be, I found out that you mentioned that you failed 39 times before you were able to kind of, I guess, find a groove for success. And you talk about how if you're going to fail, fail fast, like quickly, like fail fast and always kind of use that momentum to go into the next thing. But when you say you failed 39 times, like what exactly happened prior to Finder?
Well, in the beginning, I was running a digital marketing agency with Frank.
Yeah.
And I kind of sucked at running an agency, being straight. I'm pretty bad at, I'm just not good at the management of the inputs and the outputs. And
yeah,
I was great at the selling and the creativity.
What kind of marketing?
Just, you know, we did SEO.
Yeah.
By the way, I didn't know any SEO in the start. I just knew how to build websites and I just said,
forget it out.
Well, I was like, how are we going to get some more revenue? It was like, we better sell something else.
Yeah, I got to do a retainer package every month, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah. I didn't know about that. Like that was a new invention. This is 2001.
Yeah.
So I was 21.
Okay. Yeah.
And I never built a business, never worked in a business. I was just working it all out. And I was listening to this newsletter and it said, go and ask your customers what they want. So I called up three customers that we had, all of them. And I said, hey, what else could I do for you? And they said, oh, well, there's this thing called Google. And if you could probably get us to the top of that, that'd be really cool. And I was like, right, I'm going to go figure that out. And that's all I did.
So early that you're like, what's Google?
Literally.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I spent a long time doing that. And that gave me an input just about, then I learned about domain names and the power of them.
Yeah.
Like exact match domain names. So I bought like 1,000 domain names, still got 1,000 domain names just buried in the backyard. Like just waiting
just one day. To be, what's one of them?
Like christmasday.com.au.
What? Yeah, cool, man.
We bought anzacday.com.au. That was not a good idea.
Yeah.
We built a website and then we launched on Anzac Day. The RSL didn't like that. Got us on 2GB and you know, just all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Sudoku.com.au and all that kind of like, it was that gold rush time.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're trying to jump on that. Because I remember that being the hype back then, like park your domains, get rich, you know, you never know.
We paid 300,000 US for Finder.com.
Wow. When was that?
That was 2012.
Yeah.
And that hurt because the US dollar was like double.
Yeah. How far in the journey were you when you bought the .com domain?
Oh, sorry. It was a good 4 years, or 5 years. We were like, because we were going to run an ad, a TV ad, and we were like, and I was like, we put finder.com.au actually, and I was like, no one's going to remember that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to shorten it.
Like get rid of the .au.
And that's what people did. They typed in finder.com.
Yeah.
And you know, it's all that little bits of traffic that you want to keep.
Yeah. And with that, was someone else using it or is it just parked?
It was actually like a Russian dating site, as you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Like imagine the most... like figurative finder.com of dating with a Russian blonde girl with a dress.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, here are 5 websites where you can find me, you know.
Wow. And it was like in English, but definitely Russian.
There was definitely a Russian bend to it.
Yeah. Very Russian branding. So you contacted them. You're like, I want this domain. They were like, get banned. This is a dating site for Russians.
No, they were a professional squatter.
Oh.
So this guy held these domains for 20 years, 25 years. And it was like, he was waiting all the time for like, for them to come in, you know, like I think he had porn.com and some ridiculous domains.
Yeah.
And a large number of court cases as well of people like where he'd squatted on them and then defended and won.
Yeah. What's squatting though in the branding or in the domain space?
So squatting is, let's say there's a brand in America and it comes to Australia and you buy their brand name with a .com.au, you're sitting on their brand.
Oh, I see. You're squatting on them.
This is old school stuff that used to work.
Yeah.
and it was a big deal. Yeah. There was a lot of traffic in it. Misspellings of domain names was another one.
Really? So were you guys parking misspellings of your name?
We definitely needed to defend our brand.
Yeah.
And that was a big trend for a while. This is like pretty Wild Westy internet, you know.
Yeah, man. This sounds like the OG, like we don't know what's happening.
You could do all sorts of things and people wouldn't really understand, you know, take over browsers and, you know, like you could do some, you know, toolbars were like vicious things that would just take over your computer basically.
Mm. Yeah.
And load up all these ads and then people just assume, oh, that's the internet.
It's nothing we can do. I'm like,
damn, you haven't cyber a tough, security tough
wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah. I always get these pop ups, it takes a while to load. I'm like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
That's just people didn't know. It wasn't that level of security and sanitary. It wasn't a clean and well lit space.
Yeah.
Like LinkedIn's clean and well lit, Twitter is not.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. So like obviously, you know, coming into marketing then, being a creative kind of character, how long did it take you to kind of click like, oh, maybe marketing's not my jam? I'm probably wanting to pursue something else.
Like I liked the marketing and I learned a lot from it. You know, we used to make banner ads back when banner ads used to work, which sounds really weird, but now that I say it, but they genuinely, you know, we'd smash out like, we had Three Mobile as a, I don't remember Three Mobile, the mobile phone company. They were kind of cool from the UK.
Yeah.
And
oh, I do remember that.
Cool branding, you know, and we did all the banner ads. We used to do like 24 banners in like 3 days and like all different shapes, size, and then we just put it out there and people would click on them. And I loved the concept of them.
Yeah.
And the creative.
Like a little billboard. Little pixel it's like a little,
yeah, and you could do a cool thing.
Like I made this animate and do weird stuff, say funny things.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's like advertising in a really fast and dynamic way where you can actually take a call to action. And you can bring in data. You can do some pretty cool things.
Yeah, and you can see the data live. You can go, oh, that's working. Like double down on it, roll some more out. Yeah,
very low click through rates, but you know, if you did take it an ad that worked, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Punch the Monkey was great. You know. just literally a monkey and you punch it.
Yeah.
Then you go on this journey.
Yeah. I remember when I was 13, I used to be an avid gamer and play World of Warcraft and things like that. And the domain's down now, but we had a online gaming community with like 6,000 members called warriornation.net. And we'd have 60 to 100,000 people just coming through the forums to read about gaming blogs and stuff like that. And this is back in like 2003. And we were making a lot of money on those ads. Like people could pay to rent banner space on the website and promote stuff. And that kept the servers online, that kept our channels open. Yeah, it was a different world.
It was great.
Yeah.
I think then because I didn't like selling, you know, I wasn't good at selling time and managing resources and I sucked at it to a large degree. It wasn't my natural flair. I was much better at creating the campaigns.
Okay.
So I thought, well, why don't we go and, you know, we build all these websites for people and they're making all this money.
Mm.
I'm like, why don't we just make some websites?
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, and like just to give context, I can code. I just want to put an asterisk on that with a sub point, little sub letter down the bottom. And the sub point says, I can, you know, like a developer can put an IKEA desk together, but don't ask me to build you a bridge like an engineer.
Yeah. I could do the fun, easy stuff.
You know, I could stitch stuff and put that plug in and boot that up and use a bit of ChatGPT these days. You know, it's, you know, I went to a hackathon 2 weeks ago in New York and in July I went to one in Paris. So I'm still, you know, I've got a little bit of skill, like just enough to build an IKEA desk.
Yeah. Yeah. And look at it and go, I made that.
Yeah.
I don't have that much pride in my stuff. More like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Do you reckon you guys could now build this? Oh, now I understand what you were talking about. You know?
Yeah. Are you like a white hat or a black hatter at the hackathons?
I think I'm just, I don't know if, I guess you could be a black hat if you could do some nefarious stuff. I tend to be white, I guess.
Yeah.
It's all crypto hackathons.
Okay.
So you're building projects and there's prizes. You know, I want a small prize in a hackathon. It was like $500, but
what did you
know,
build?
We built this tiny little thing that encrypted a secret, and you spent you paid like, you know, whatever, $5 in crypto, and it revealed the secret to you.
Oh.
Very simple,
like a crypto project that's kind of creative and abstract.
Super simple.
Yeah,
it's got a secret. You want the secret?
Yeah,
I'll pay $5. I get the secret.
That's that's cool, man. And you won $500.
Yeah, because we used this library that was specially used for encryption and
yeah.
Yeah, I think what I sort of realized trying to come back to, you know, with the marketing and the stories, I don't know why, but I just naturally would create ideas and just invent things and then want to go and do them. And then I had enough skill to be able to go and do that. Now, you know, with NPM and Node, and the stuff's like, it's gotten a bit more intense and away from my OG raw JavaScript WordPress stuff, which still works, you know, to some extent, but it's now, you know, things have moved quite prodigiously on. But those skills give me enough. Back then they were like, that was, you know, you're in the game. You're just, you know, you're dangerous.
You're and a genius if you could do JavaScript.
Yeah.
You could animate something.
Like, I never learned, like jQuery, we didn't have jQuery.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, you know, and all that whole journey. No frameworks, just roll your own, you know.
Like, would you say you're like quite a curious person? Like, you're always trying to figure things out by tinkering? Like, you know, the kind of person that's like, oh, I like that radio, I want to see what's inside it and pull it apart and play with it.
So, I used to do that as a kid. I tore my dad's everything apart. Like, computer, tape recorders. I actually got an electric clock as a kid. I don't know if I've told this story before. If I have, I apologize to anyone who's listening. But I had an electric clock. An electric clock was a big deal. This is in the 80s. And I was like, oh, I was playing with this tape recorder and I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just sort of mangling it.
How old were you?
I reckon probably 5.
Yeah.
Max.
Yeah.
Maybe 6. And I was like, I need a piece of cable. So I went over to the electric clock and I was like, oh, there's a piece of cable. And I literally cut it with some pliers. And it sparked up, like, full on. I'll never forget it. And I was like, oh, I think that was a bad idea. And I went and ran in my parents' room and I said, I think I did something. And I was crying. I was like, I think that was really bad. I don't know why, but I don't think it should spark like that. That's not cool. And then I sort of processed it. But I realized, I think that's kind of a metaphor. If you talk about the tinkering, I'm prepared to go and, like, most things that I'm going to recommend or talk about, I have done. I've put the money in. I've tasted the wire, or I've, you know, literally put those two chemicals together and then see what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe in a small scale.
Yeah.
But I'm prepared to go and do that.
Yeah. So even as a little kid, you were very curious, you know, like, how do things work? How do I... Well, you were, like, really trying to... like, even if you go into your young teenage years, were you kind of always curious about things like that and trying to figure things out?
I played a lot of computer games back then.
Yeah.
I played a lot of sport. I rode my rib BMX. I was a skateboarder. I think I was just curious about physics, you know, and understanding dynamics. In my teenage years, I didn't really get that technical, being straight. I played a lot of computer games and I loved figuring out how to, you know, bring the game together and play it and win it. I play a lot of sport, which is really weird, but, again, I'm not like the most athletic dude. Like, you know, you would go, oh, that guy's an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm necessarily a Grand Slam tennis player, that's for sure. But, like, but I could play a good, that. I can play like a solid game.
Solid match.
You know, and I can play, like, the other night I played squash, you know, after, and I can play like solid, like it, you know.
Dude, that's a crazy hard game to master. Like, I've watched people play it. I've never played it, but
love squash.
It's intense.
Very intense.
You're like close proximity to someone throwing a racket at this tiny little ball at a wall right in front of you. It's insane.
And it's very, it's almost a gladiator sport to some extent, because you're trying to basically outrun, make your other guy outrun where you're too tired. You don't want to get the next ball.
Yeah.
It's brutal. I'm trying to complete the square for you, because there's a bit of an unusual thing that I never really thought about.
Yeah.
But I think I have this, it talks about curiosity. I think the thing I was fascinated by in that was to test myself. Mm. You know, I would play tournaments. I never really would win that much. Sometimes, you know, I don't think I was the best player, but I think I won. I also played very competitive chess.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like I was the captain of the chess team. I know that sounds unusual again.
Yeah, this is such a juxtaposition. Like, you know, playing in chess, skateboarding, climbing trees, BMX,
starting fires. Like, genuine, I love to go out and, like,
cutting wires off things. Yeah.
Literally set fire to things.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a few stories. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but I burnt down a tree in my schoolyard.
Yeah.
Controlled fire.
It was a controlled fire. Yeah.
You knew what the amount of fuel that there was going to be, you know.
I was trying to calculate. I was like, how much, you know, it's a big tree. Yeah.
For the sake of the listeners, it's a controlled fire.
I climbed up and, like, doused the tree. I'm like, oh, I should do it.
That's nice.
Yeah. Lit it up.
Yeah, but you wanted to see.
Yeah, I wanted to see how fast it burned down. Yeah. We probably edit that out. I went to a lot of schools to try and find me.
I think I like that, trying to build on that.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a range of ideas that I continuously are arriving to me from the universe, and they become very loud to me, and I have to almost manage my actions based on that. And some can be destructive and some can be extremely creative. And my business partner, you know, Frank, he describes it as, you know, he talked very openly about me to this VC the other day. He said, yeah, Freddie's like this. He's like, he'll give you me 10 ideas. 8 of them, they'll be a bit questionable. 1 will be pretty good, but 1, no one in this world would have ever thought of. That's where the alpha lives.
So you're like maybe, more of like an idea guy, like you like creating ideas and then seeing if they can
messing come with them
and then bring them into fruition and see them. Yeah. There's like a, even for me as a creative, like, you know, some of the craziest ideas I've had, I'm like, oh, what would actually happen if that was real or we designed that or we created that and then we create it. And then there's this huge dopamine rush. You're like, oh, that was fulfilling.
Yeah.
When's the next one? It's like a hit.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I like that.
I find creative addictive when you can see it into fruition.
I want to become an intern here.
Yeah, you're welcome to, man.
I would love that.
Come in on Monday.
Like, come in on Monday. I'm just going to start up. Put me on the till. Just put me on a project.
Yeah. Just don't explain who you are. Like, who is that guy?
Yeah.
Don't worry about
what's he doing here?
That's Fred. Yeah. Who's Fred? Why is he here?
He's just an ideas guy.
He's an ideas guy. You know, just built.
And then just come in, just like, on the door, it's like, hey man, can we, what if we got it and we added this and turn it backwards and then turn it into a song?
Let's try
and that. And then it's like, all right.
Yeah, you know, I think that'd make fun content for you, man, because like you've got this awesome personal brand. And like I was chatting to Cam and Dennis about this earlier today. I'm like, you know, if you sit down and you close your eyes and you think about, you know, a credit card, loan, software, technology company, and it has 500 employees, you're in 6 countries, your brain immediately goes to finances, suit and tie.
Yeah.
But you're so contrarian to that in so many ways. Like for you having your public persona, if you take it back to the beginning, do you think how you approached your industry hindered or helped as a brand behind a company like Finder?
It's a very vulnerable question because it's something which I've wrangled with. It's one that particularly I get a lot of feedback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I see as feedback, and I really what's puzzling probably to you that will probably I don't know if it makes sense. I didn't really think about it.
Yeah. Cool.
I just
happened.
I just put it out there.
Yeah.
You know,
like this is me.
So one thing I was listening to this thing about there was Ken Cochison, who was the keyboard designer and coder for the iPad and the iPhone.
Yeah.
So there never was a digital keyboard. That's actually quite a difficult, you know, there was always a physical one.
Yeah.
And he invented this digital keyboard.
Okay.
For this. And he worked.
Like software, or are you talking about like a physical?
You know, when you open your phone, you type a message and there's a keyboard on your smartphone.
Oh, I'm thinking of like a synth, like, you know, music keyboard.
Sorry. Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry.
Like a digital keyboard that you can tactically touch.
Yeah. Exactly. No one had ever built that.
Yeah.
And so his role on the Apple team, on the iPhone team, was to build that. And he wrote a book about building it.
I didn't know that. And this is back when Steve was like, I want everything to be on one button. I want everything to be touch screen without the stylus and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is around that era.
Yeah. So the he was on it was called Project Purple. The book is you can buy it.
What's it called?
It's a creative selection. So it's
okay.
Well worth a listen or a read or whatever. Purely because of the way in which they approach certain things. And he talked about like, why is Apple, you know, what is it that makes that, you know, obviously he's part of the team. He's an engineer, and certain engineers will come on these projects and certain were not.
Yeah.
You know, you were invited onto that project and literally inside Apple, there were like certain swipes, your swipe worked or didn't work and you were allowed inside a place or not.
Right.
And
you were compartmentalized the project so it didn't leak. Yeah.
And literally people couldn't, you know, not participate. You're not invited.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think one of the things he really talked about, and I sort of wanted to pick up on this, and this might be, I think, what you guys have a lot of as well, is one of the key aspects that he talked about that Apple does is, you know, when they talk about, oh, you know, you don't, they don't go and do focus groups and stuff like that. They do go and do customer tests.
Mm-hmm.
To like, they definitely do that. They pay people actually to go and test their products and they get feedback. Actually, Steve had a guy who literally, he's actually on LinkedIn still. He literally followed Steve around everywhere.
Yeah.
And just gave him feedback.
Just using his product all the time. And
no, like every meeting he would come to with Steve. And
give him feedback on everything he was doing.
Yeah, and go, oh, I think that's actually really nasty. That's not going to work. Oh, and wow. He'd go, why? And he'd debate it out. Like he wanted that constant input.
Right.
It's a wacky role. I think it's the guy's worked at several companies. I can't believe this. I looked up on LinkedIn. I was like, oh my God, it actually exists. Akio Morita had it as well. So I love Akio.
Yeah.
He got a guy who was, for everyone listening, Akio is one of the founders of Sony.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I was like trying to run through my Rolodex. I'm like, do I know Akio?
No, yeah. Akio Morita. Yeah. So Sony was the Apple of the 80s.
Yeah. That's very true.
You had a Sony VHS, you had a Sony TV, you had a Sony
Walkman.
Had a camera, a recorder.
Yep. Sony everything. That was the Apple.
It was the Apple of the 80s.
Yeah.
And Akio was literally like the Steve of the 80s.
Okay. And was this in Japan?
He took it out of Japan to America,
yeah,
and took Sony, and then obviously they got into music, just like Apple did. Like the iPod, because Steve loved Akio, loves Sony. iPod was just a Walkman rebooted.
Okay, that's interesting. That like you've seen the movie with Steve Jobs, not the first one with Ashton Kutcher, the second one.
I probably have. It's been a while, but
yeah, it takes a really different take on him. If you could pull up what actor that was, but
Michael
like
Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, dude, that has Ashton Kutcher had this kind of aspirational, you know, up and coming kind of energy to it.
I'm worried. I'm going to
open
it. Oh,
no, go for it, man.
Drink.
Just open it
for everyone listening. This is a can of Coca-Cola. Just so you know.
Is that
we're bringing
that
this to you.
Which is the one that Brad's obsessed with, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's Michael Fassbender.
Is that the one he's obsessed with?
He tries to take girls on the dates and puts that movie on. Anyways, weird segue. But the movie, it really showcases like the kind of the dark side of Steve and how he was constantly debating the team around him. Like he was almost like, he almost enjoyed conflict. It kept him on his toes.
Mm.
It seems like he thrived on, not drama, but thrived on the way the movie portrays it. Like he really thrived on the kind of, not the chaos, but just the challenge. Like he relished in the difficulty and the challenge, and he wanted to constantly find out ways to blow people's minds. So he had a guy following him around just to feedback everything he was doing.
Yeah, give him feedback
on
products. And so Akio had the same thing. He had a mate, like a guy who won. They put out a camera and the guy said, like he wrote I think it was about sound, or I can't remember if it was a sound or camera. It was, they had several, but they'd pay this guy and he was a photographer, and he said, he wrote back this 3-page memo saying, this is why your camera is broken. Like literally, it's a finished product. This is like camera's broken. These are all the things that are incorrect. This is exactly what you need to do and change it.
Yeah.
And Akio was like he's never seen any, you know, he's never seen feedback like that.
Yeah, wow.
And he went and hired the guy.
Wow.
And they would send their products to him, and like they would go and get the ruthless feedback.
Yeah.
Ruthless feedback.
Yeah. You'd think a CEO type person would get their ego hurt or get pissed off about something like that. But Akio was like, no, this guy's
we
got
need
a
that.
Point.
Yeah. He's a great photographer.
Critical thinker.
Yeah. Thank you for this. Yeah. Thank you. Not everything you can accept, you need to sometimes decline.
Yeah.
Because of certain reasons. But, you know, you want to hear that. I think what I was trying to submit is, you know, one of the moments I think is really interesting is when Akio Morita said, let's go and make a Walkman. And I think this is what I'm trying to say, to sort of trying to bring the point. And I think this is what's interesting and instructive. Hopefully everyone's listening.
I'm intrigued.
Is that, you know, when he went to build a Walkman, no one walked around with headphones on.
That's a new concept at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You, like everyone had a ghetto blaster on their shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
The good old days.
You want to walk
My
out?
Stepdad had one of those things.
Yeah.
Man. He loved it.
It was sick. I had one, and it's like, it was cool.
Yeah.
You walk outside and no one, and he was like, like how, like we should make a, he was always about, and you look at Steve, he copied the exact same thing. He said he wanted to make music pocketable.
Okay.
That's an important word. And that's why Steve puts the iPod, if you look at it in the presentation, he puts it in his top pocket. Yeah. Akio did this exact same thing. And unfortunately, the first Walkman was slightly big, so they actually made the salespeople's pockets slightly wider. Okay. That's a whole other thing.
A little deceitful, but it's
pocketable.
Cool. Yeah.
And you know, it's 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah. Because Steve Jobs did the one, you know how you have the little pocket on the jeans?
Yeah.
He did that with the release. He's like, ever wondered what this pocket was for?
Yeah.
And then he pulls the iPod out of it.
Yeah, and then puts it back in.
Yeah. And everyone's like, ooh. Yeah.
So what's, I think, instructive about that, and I think it's interesting, is that, you know, he said, oh, people want to take their music with them.
Mm.
And everyone was like, well, how are you going to, you know, you've got this cassette, by the way, they also made happen. They would, how are you going to get a speaker in there? And there's not enough power.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm going to make the sound, because, by the way, Sony is actually from the word sonus, which is sound. So they specialize in that. The first thing they made was actually a recorder in courthouses. So okay. another interesting note. But they made it little. They said, I'm going to make it so small that I'm going to put it in people's ears. I only have to make a tiny little sound.
And only a little bit of energy.
A little bit of energy.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, no one's going to walk around and put sound things in their ears.
Yeah. That's stupid, Akio.
What are you doing, man?
That's obnoxious.
And so
you're gonna look silly.
Yeah, he had to fight the cut internally so hard.
Yeah.
That he went to his business partner and he went to the board and said, "Look, I want you to fund this project.
Yeah.
I want you to build 30,000 units, and if they don't sell, you can fire me.
Whoa.
From my own company.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's conviction.
That's a power move. That's certainty. It's like this will work.
They sold. You know, I think it's upward of 250 million Walkmans.
Christ. And this is in the 80s. It's so strange to think about that, because everywhere you go now, like, you know, downstairs is like a big business district here in Sydney, and you'll see people crossing the street. Everyone has headphones on.
Everyone has.
It's weird. It's almost like, oh, you don't have headphones on, you weirdo. What are you walking around listening to nothing? You know, like it's so different now. That's crazy.
So yeah. I think one of the things I wanted to
thought about that.
Yeah, I think if I can tie the point back, so I think what is it that goes all the way back, and again trying to pay homage to people I think who are in branding and marketing, and is what I think that comes back to is again in what Ken talked about in Apple, is they have, when they come to those hard decisions like that and like making a Walkman, they actually rely on themselves to make those decisions. And what he describes it as is taste. People inside Apple have taste.
Yeah.
So funny, another funny story, and to build on that, what is taste? There's a, I've forgotten the guy's, the chef, the chef really loud screamed at everyone.
Gordon Ramsay.
Gordon Ramsay.
He was asked, you know, what makes a great chef? You know, is it way he cuts, the way he goes? No, it's actually if he can taste great food. Because then he knows how to make it.
It's like a sense. Like, can you, it like it almost like a Apple scent. Well, Steve really had it, like you could sense what would and wouldn't work, almost to a level where it almost felt spiritual. Like you could kind of predict through the glass ball, like this will work, you know. And not everything did, but he had a great ability to taste things. And even like an Apple Watch, like did you see the Apple Watch that they invented in like 1986?
No,
they had an Apple Watch, and you could plug it into your Windows 95. 90, whatever it was back then.
Wow.
And you could like upload a file onto it. It was like radical stuff, like your floppy disk. You'd upload a file from your floppy disk to your watch, then take your watch to work, and then plug your watch into your Mac PC and put the file on your computer. It was like wild stuff like that. It never really made the market, but he was constantly trying to just mess with things and just see what was possible.
Yeah.
Like that wild curiosity that I think you're talking about. And I feel like, you know, even growing up, man, like I always felt like a little crazy, because my mind was always looking at the crazy big picture and the details at the same time. Like I'm able to kind of flip between both. Like, you know, when people say, oh, you're a big picture guy, you're a little picture guy, I was like, no, I'm actually hardcore detail oriented and hardcore big picture.
Yep.
Do you feel like you have like the same kind of cadence? Because you seem very detailed, but at the same time, simultaneously, very big picture, very like broad, open-minded, creative thinking.
You know, I think it's a context switch.
Yeah.
And I can do that. I can, you know, let's lens in and go to this exact formula of how this works.
Yeah.
But then come out to go, what is the macro impact of this to the brand or to the people's appearance? How are they going to view this?
Yeah.
And how do those two things go together? To a large degree, yeah, it's pretty cognitively intense.
Yep. Yeah.
To stop and zoom and pause your mind, almost like a ballerina when they like hit a move.
It looks effortless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's slow down to like talk about a very minute detail to then come back up and then make another movement.
Yeah.
I feel that sometimes I could get home and I'm like, you know, I sat at my desk or I sat at some chairs and I stood up and down and then I got home and I'm exhausted.
Yep.
Why am I so tired, man?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
Dude, like, even when we were hanging out at Turo, like I could tell like you're a guy, you're, because we were in conversations and we're hanging out at the Turo launch party here in Sydney and I could just tell your mind was like really processing a lot of things simultaneously to holding a good conversation, having a good chat. But I could just tell like you're also like thinking about a lot of things all at once. And like going back to the beginning when you founded Finder, you know, what happened between the agency marketing and that and then having to buy a Russian dating site and launching Finder, bro?
Well, I think maybe I was trying to connect the cable all the way back if I can try.
I love the taste thing though. That was interesting. That's I know what you mean though.
That's what you guys have here. Yeah. You know, it's like a museum. It's not about the paintings you put on the wall. It's the ones you leave on the floor.
Mm. Ooh, profound.
What is that from?
Is that you?
Is that you?
I have no idea anymore. These days.
It is now.
I probably butchered that from somewhere.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what I love. I enjoy. I think tell you guys, you know, and that's why. It's the same with the ideas, right?
Yeah.
It's like I can go and present something and go, it's that. It's like there were four Finder jingles played in front of me, and it took me 7 minutes. I was like, it's that one.
Yeah.
Just play that one. That's it.
Yeah. Like a gut hunch almost. Just,
that's it. It's like, that's the one.
Yeah.
It's not that one. And it's not that one. And it's not that. You play that over and over again. People are going to remember that.
Yeah.
That certainty.
Yeah.
It's and taste. You know, it's, and I think that idea going back all the way back to, you know, and I wanted to share this as well if I can.
Yeah,
so
go
I think
for
this
it,
is another thing. This is really instructive. I think for creative people, this is probably the most uncomfortable thing.
Mm.
That you will experience, and I've started to get really used to it and enjoy it, is I call it wandering.
Mm.
And it's where you have an idea and you put something out there and it fails, but it doesn't, you know, there's something there. That's your taste telling you as a creative person. You're going, there's something here. It's not the right format, and you're waiting for the right feedback, or the universe needs to give you another piece of something that's going to arrive so that then you can see that lens. But, and that wandering is, and I want you to imagine another picture. You know, when you're in a big field, like big, long, and ahead of you, you can't see over the horizon.
Yeah.
Like you kind of can, but you kind of can't.
Yeah. Like one of those big open meadows, but flowers are just going forever.
Yeah. And it's just going, but you're like, there's something over the other, and long, long way away, you can see some mountains and some snow and stuff.
Yeah.
But like where you are, there's a lot between there and mountain.
Mm.
And you're like, okay, but think of like your creative journey and what you're creating. So in creating Finder and these 39 challenging experiments, all sorts of weird and wacky things, think of them like walking from where you are a good distance so that you couldn't, where you are now, you couldn't see before, could not. That's fundamental. You need to go that far where you're uncomfortable, you're scared, you're in a new territory. It's a whole new set of variables. You've learned a whole new things that you never knew, saw, understood before.
Yeah.
And now if you're in that place, what tends to happen, if you just stop for a moment and just accept that, and even though maybe the project failed, maybe it didn't, maybe it had some success, just pause there and recognize now when you go look at those mountains again, you're seeing a whole new other set of places that you never saw before.
Different landscape.
And when you look backwards, everything's obvious.
Yeah. Like I know how I got here.
Yeah, I know I got here. Yeah. And you go, wow, why didn't I just go up that ladder over there? That would have been much easier. And you know, those, that's where a lot of other people come in and they optimize things, right?
Yeah.
So in your creative journey, what I do a lot of, and in what were those 39s? They were me wandering a field. But let's just maybe contextualize this. It's not like I knew to go to the mountains, or I knew to go back to the forest, or go to the beach, or go that way, which like I didn't know any of those. And I think that's what every creative person feels like. But naturally, inside my soul, like that curiousness, I'm prepared to go for like a journey. Go, hey guys, you know what? I got an idea. Like imagine right now this is a creative experiment.
Yeah, yeah.
We went, hey guys, I got an idea. Let's go and like create something for 24 hours. I don't know what we're going to create. Yeah. Let's just go and make something. We'll get together, get all your skills, bring everything you've got and let's just see what we can make.
I'm in.
Like how awesome is that?
Yeah. Because we don't know like where that would go.
There's no way
you could possibly imagine where we're going to be in 24 hours.
Yeah.
No idea.
And then when you get somewhere, you'll be like, whoa, look where we are here. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. And then you're like, hey, wait a minute. I've been over there. Oh, these go together.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Look at that. And now suddenly, you know, that might be a thing. So with Finder, it was like, I've done SEO, heaps of SEO. Yeah. I've written content. Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. I've done domain names. So we got a good, you know, it was credit card finder in the start. And then we chopped it off with the credit card and put, you know, it's like, okay, there's a good combination of things. Yeah. So I'm wandering, right? I'm wandering into this place and I'm like, wait a minute. If I zoom out, there's a bigger business here.
Yeah.
What if we went and did this in a few other places? And it kind of evolved in that way.
Yeah.
You
know, really have that revelation till you're at that
moment. I was in no way, shape, or form did I go, I got an idea. Let's compare stuff and do it in lots of countries and, you know.
You just started wondering and figuring it out.
Just literally put a backpack on and went, hey, like I literally would do this to Frank. It's so funny. This is hilarious. I literally go, hey man, I got an idea. Actually, I got a lot of ideas and I'm probably just going to go and explore for a while.
And he just doesn't know when you're coming back.
He's like, carry on, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, and then I'll come back to him and go, man, I've made this. Look at this. And it does like this. And this is what it does.
Yeah.
And he's like I remember presenting him credit card fund. I was like, this is what it does. And it goes like this. And he's like, man, that's terrible. Like, I'm like, no, that's, oh, okay. Yeah, that is pretty bad. Okay, let's fix that. Okay, you know, what else? He's like, actually this and this. And then over time, like obvious things which you don't, because you've wandered off, picked up an uncut gem, gone, there's something in this. Your taste is telling you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There's a Walkman here. But at first it was literally like putting two wooden planks on the side of your head with a piece of wire that made noise. And you're like, Accio, bro, I don't know, man. Like, you know,
yeah, it's been nuts,
ease up
man.
On that.
Yeah.
Or the Newton. The Newton was the first, you know, that's where Apple got, that was a failed project in the 90s.
Which one's the Newton?
So the Newton was literally a tablet with the stylus and it failed.
Yeah.
But that's when they went and made the keyboard, they actually went back and went, oh, how did we do it with the Newton? Oh, that's, they literally fast forwarded everything.
Really? They went back and looked at their old technology to get inspired for their latest.
The guy literally goes, man, when we build a Newton, he knew what to type to mess up the autocorrect of Ken's program. Because he goes, I worked on the Newton and I know what's going to mess it up. He put it in and the guy was like, damn.
Yeah.
But that's what, when you create something, that discomfort, you know, people, you know, like a lot of people, this is going to sound weird. People go to me like, you know, like I'm like sitting still and not doing anything. And I'm like, I realize if someone was to judge me and look at me and go, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm thinking. Yeah. And what did you do today? I thought of things and I threw away a lot of stuff. And then I connect that things up with that. And this is what came out. And sometimes it's, turns into a drawing, or sometimes it gets into a document I write, or a story, and other times it's just a conversation and I realize that's nothing, or I'll turn it into a pitch and pitch to someone, or it just depends on the form. And I'm seeking I'm inviting the universe to, you know, I see ideas are already out there. You're just like a channel that goes and hops on top of them and goes for a ride.
Like swapping radio stations.
Literally. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, oh, I've heard a sound I never heard before.
That's
what
interesting.
Is
that? Yeah. I didn't know that channel list, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think this, what I wanted to share was, I think that that discomfort of wandering and inventing ideas and failures and all those kinds of things, that's going somewhere. Mm. Keep going.
Why do you think it is that people find that extraordinarily uncomfortable? Because we were chatting about this even like, I'm in the process of publishing a book specifically on like the uncomfortability of starting without knowing the end point, which is really interesting. The analogy you shared is beautiful, that the field and looking at your peripherals and just not knowing quite what's between you and the goal. Like the scenario would change so much and you just never know where you're going to end up. And that's how I got here, because I started out just making content and I was like, I don't know where this is going. And then slowly started to adapt it into creating the agency and so on. Like, for you, like, what do you think it is that stifles most people from persevering through that uncomfortability? Because so many people get stuck at that point and they don't start.
I think there's something I've thought about this a lot, and I observe it in myself when I get really uncomfortable. What am I doing? So when we, as you know, upwardly mobile people, what we do is we set goals for ourselves, and we go, well, I set a goal. I need a purpose. I need to go and do something. Mm-hmm. And here's my goal.
Yeah.
I want to go and invent, you know, a new phone. And again, remember the Newton is the wandering. So let's remember that.
It's a great analogy, by the way. Yeah.
And so you're on this journey, right? Mm. And you punish yourself because you're not there. You're like, well, I'm not taking steps. I'm going, in fact, I'm going backwards. I don't even know where I'm going. And, you know, I think the greatest analogy of this is, I think there's a book called Creativity Inc., which I've recently
got it. It's a beautiful book.
Great book, right?
Amazing.
I think the part which I found instructive is where they say every movie maker gets lost at some point.
Yeah.
Which, you know, imagine like, you know, you make content. Imagine making 90 minutes of content.
Yeah.
Visual, sound.
Yeah.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
And it's got to hold your attention.
And it's going to be captivating and brilliant the whole time.
Like that's...
Because when you make a piece of content, you're like, ah, that one hit. Those five fizzled. These two did all right. The whole thing has to be a hit.
Whole thing.
Yeah. Minute after minute.
And so you're imagining going on this journey. You're trying to figure out, like, this character does this, but then you get to this point, you're like, why is this character doing that?
Yeah.
Like, why are they in this scene again? Where are we?
Yeah.
Wait, what's this movie story arc about again?
Yeah. Like you get to that point where you start questioning everything.
Everything.
Because I'm writing a book at the moment and I'm like, I'll nail a chapter. And the team's like, this is fucking great. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore.
Yeah.
How do I write the second chapter again? You were going to do this. Yeah, but I don't like that idea anymore. Like it's just, it's so bizarre, man. Because you're wondering, and that's what it's been like writing a book and building an agency. It's just, you have to get comfortable in that pocket. It's like drumming. You just got to find the pocket.
Yeah.
Like, where is it? And how do I stay there?
So the dissonance and the discomfort, I believe, comes from your rational measuring of oneself to the goals you're trying to achieve, and not counting the wandering and the mistakes and the knowledge that you've gained from the process. Right. So for you writing this book, you've learned to write chapters now. Like before, you didn't know how to write a chapter.
Yeah.
Like, what does a chapter feel like?
Yeah.
How does it come across?
I was kept down in year two for not knowing how to write, you know?
So. Yeah. But now you're like, oh, chapters feel like that. That's interesting. Those two chapters go nice together. Oh,
yeah.
And now when you observe someone else's book, you go and you read the chapters, you go, oh, look how they've done that.
Yeah.
And you see, oh, they've done it like that. That's interesting. Now you can see that.
Yeah.
Now you've walked in the field over the hill where you weren't before.
Yeah.
And now you can see. And people don't appreciate that. They don't go, oh, well, I've not achieved anything. Where's my materiality out of the coming of this? No, you've got psychological assets that you could never have had unless you went and did that work.
Yeah. And you wrote a book, Go Live, was it? How did you find the process writing it?
That was a very challenging process.
Yeah.
So I think my hack on this was probably, I don't know if this is good or bad, but I got a...
And the book's about like creating a business, right? From scratch,
how to get an idea going.
Yeah.
And just these are core principles that I believe about when you want to do that. Mm. Like this thing, you read that, like it'll give you an injection to fire up and go and like get it going.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about things a lot of the time. I'm like,
give me that hit of certainty and let's go.
We're going to go and do something. Yeah. We're going to go live.
Yeah.
Like we're going to make something happen.
Yeah. That is an energy you can tap into, because that's how this whole thing started. Was I went to a Gary Vee event, frustrated, broke, no money, and I was there for the whole day, and it was just back-to-back speakers selling boot camps. And then Gary runs out at the end, and there's 5,000 people in the room. They're all disengaged from like 8 hours of an onslaught of like nonstop sales bullshit. Gary comes out, and the first thing he says on stage after all these speakers, lots of them famous, he runs out and he says, "What's up, Brisbane? I'm not here to sell you shit." And the crowd went crazy because he knew what he had to say in that moment. And then his whole keynote for 10 minutes, because he did 10 minutes keynote, 2 hours Q&A. But in the 10 minutes, he basically was like, you don't need to buy something. You don't need a coach. You don't need these mechanisms. You literally need to just go start. Basically what you're saying about the wandering thing, he's like, just go. Like just pack the bag and leave and just figure it out. And like you seemingly have this kind of ability to inject yourself into an idea and just back it, even though you can't completely see the outcome or the end destination. do you feel like when you find that energy, it's pretty loose? You're like, there's something here, I want to discover it. Or is it like, I'm going to create X?
I heard this thing from, I think it was the Y Combinator guy, Paul Graham.
Paul Graham. Yeah.
He said most, if you want to find a really, really interesting problem to go and solve for a customer, go and start solving one. Because you start solving it, then you go, I like that problem.
Yeah.
And you start coming up with three other problems.
Yeah.
And then you start, these threads just start coming up. And now you don't have any problem coming up with problems. You don't know which problem to go and choose.
Yeah.
And so that's my mindset.
Okay.
Just lean in, start, let's go.
Commence. Just lean in and look at the problems.
Yeah. Let's go and like, imagine like right now we get like, you know, five books from, there's a magical library here, guys, by the way. Magical.
Yeah.
And we tore 10 pages out of each one, stacked them together randomly, and said, okay, well, what does this mean? What's the universe telling us? And we started to go and create something.
That's like some Rick Rubin stuff.
Yeah.
Did you hear that story about System of a Down?
No.
What's the name of the guy who's the lead singer of System of a Down?
Corey Taylor. Oh, no, sorry. That's
Slipknot. Slipknot. Yeah.
Talking about him today.
Serge Tankian. He was like in the recording studio trying to write, I think it's Chop Suey. And Rick Rubin, is that the guy? Yeah, he's got like white hair. Do you know about this character?
This is going to be, keep going. I have a very interesting story coming.
Dude, I'm excited. But yeah, like, do you know this story though? About the,
So
he was stuck writing a verse for the song and Rick said, just grab a book. And Serge is like, what do you mean? He's like, just grab any book. And you open a book and he just goes, read the first thing that grabs your attention. And then they put that as the lyrics, as the chorus of the song of Chop Suey. Yeah. You know that part of, I can't remember the lyrics. But yeah, it's just like one of the greatest,
I love it,
lyrical pieces of all time. It's just plucked out of a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, yep. Yeah, the yeah. stuff like that, it's like.
That's wandering.
How do you explain it? You can't. It just happened. But I'm excited to hear your story, Rick Rubin.
Oh, so how do you explain? So hopefully, you know, I think that's one thing I recognize and know about myself is that, and this is taking me a significant period of time, by the way, that I am not necessarily, you know, the CEO of a company, which is a very, very, very hard thing to reconcile, you know, when you create something. And even now with one of the crypto projects I'm working with, I'm not the CEO, which is again, you know, from the start, I've said I'm not the CEO.
Yeah.
But
the venture capital?
One of the projects, it's a crypto project.
Yeah.
Balthazar.
Oh, I remember talking about this at Tura.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Super still doing interesting. We're about to launch. We've got this NFT coming out. It's so sick. It's a game. It's got Space Invaders baked into the game. Super sick. Super cool. I won't get into it. It's been an incredible wandering journey of unbelievable challenge. There's been at least, this is the third business model that we've gone through.
Okay.
And the wandering part of it is so vast that we understand a large amount of territory now of things, customers, intimately, what they like, what they don't like, all sorts of experiments, made some money, lost some money. Like this is like the most rawest, fast-paced environment you could imagine for creativity.
Yeah.
And throughout it, you know, I'm my role is so interesting is I'm very much this creator, but I'm not the CEO.
Yeah.
Which is really
You're kind of like
a proxy to the CEO, yeah. And I'll say like, hey, you know, as a business, we should probably go and look at this capital allocation and get into the P&L and actually go through the accounting statements. I'll go through everything.
Yeah.
But go, I don't think I should be the guy. The buck shouldn't stop with me.
Yeah.
Being straight, like I'm not that guy. Like you probably want to go and get someone else.
Mm.
They'd be much more reliable and consistent and, you know.
That's really interesting, man. Sorry to interrupt you, but like even with Finder, like I know you talked about it, finding it extremely difficult to step down as CEO. And sit on the board. You know, was that a change in life decision or was that like, what was the mechanism of that? And then why did you carry that into your new enterprise?
It's a very challenging one.
Mm.
And I think I'm just trying to give this concept, maybe if I can frame it slightly.
Yeah, go for it, man.
And I don't know how to I don't know what we're framework wandering. To use here. This is a bit we're of a wandering idea.
Together, man. We're living it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to try and explain this in as best I can.
Okay.
So I think there is a CEO inside me. Mm-hmm. Like there is an extremely good one, and it's probably just emotionally and being very vulnerable here.
Yeah.
I just don't think I necessarily was mature enough to be that guy.
Okay.
I'm just a bit of a young kid in an older dude's body, basically. You know, but that's some beauty in that. You don't want to lose that. You got to keep that curiosity, right?
Yeah, well,
you
still want to be a kid. Steve had that too, man.
Still want to be fun.
Yeah, you remind me of like kind of Steve's childlike curiosity where he was just, it's almost like I'm being vulnerable here too. Like I feel like I was always the black sheep, right? Because my mind was always like thinking in a different place, very differently about a problem. And parents had me tested for like ADHD and all the rest of it. And I was just like, no, there's nothing there. It's just, my brain's racing, right? So you felt like maybe you weren't mature enough to be the CEO that you needed to be because it was a financial company, or
just like I'd be very flighty.
Yeah.
I needed to be calmer. I needed to understand myself better. I need to understand how things affect people a little more.
Yeah. Was it the size? Like, did it get to the point where you're like, man, this is too big now?
Things take a long time and I'm like impatient. Like, I'm like I could go and get that done in an hour.
Yeah.
Why isn't everyone else do it? Why does it take a week?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, actually, Fred, you need to go and like write a plan, and then you need to go communicate with like 20 people, and then we need to go have a meeting. But not everyone's in the same time zone. So we need to go and plan that meeting, and then to actually organize, you know, it's just like, I'm like, okay, I'm already done. Like,
yeah.
You lost me. Like, I would just send an email and we're off. Like, or I just send a group Slack message, and if you didn't read it, you missed it.
Right.
like the velocity needs to be high.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good energy. And I do add to the organization in that sense.
Yep.
But I think it can be extremely tough to form around and have a good consistency. And I think my instinct is that, you know, I think a lot of, some people have different, you know, like different combinations of different attributes. And I think it's better when I'm the CEO for a period of time.
Mm.
And then I'm like, okay, now you drive.
Yeah.
Because I'm like driving all the time. I think we shouldn't have me driving all the time.
Yeah. Like I'll come in when needed.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Get me in and like I can like invent this thing and put this thing together and it's like we're gonna like this and this and this person, no, that person needs to go over there. Okay, that you know, that's good. We're gonna get this and there it is. Oh, now it's working. Cool. All right, let's do it for a while and then I'm like, we should probably get someone who's like an adult to run this thing. Not like a kid, you know, like.
Yeah, that's
because I probably am, you know, better suited to take on the next thing.
Yeah.
Mm. There's a guy who's the business partner to the Netflix guy, Mark. I can't remember his last name.
We can look it up.
And he was the co-founder. And then he was with them for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years and then sold his shares and you know, a good portion of them. Mm. And then went built a whole other series of startups.
Okay.
And they did, you know, quite well as well. It gets to a certain point where like the amount of value created in a certain, you know, form of the time that I add versus, you know, continuously aligning people and communicating and is disproportionate.
Yeah.
But there's this perception in society that if you're not the CEO, then, you know, like you got kicked out of your company. You know, even the AFR still today writes, oh, Fred stepped down as CEO. It's like, no, I'm still here. Like I was always here and I probably wasn't really the CEO for a long time.
Yeah.
I was the co-CEO, you know, and to some extent I work very closely with Frank in just the same way.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, like, I'm like, I don't think that necessarily reflects the reality of how creativity works. Right? Creativity doesn't come like, oh, you know, here's creativity, boom. It's like, it needs to arrive. And then it's like, it has arrived. I'm channeling this thing here. I've created this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and I think that's what I'm sure like you guys experience.
Yeah, you can't like force it into creation because we talk about this with branding and we tell our clients that the company we're building or the brand identity we're building for you will organically reveal itself when it's ready. And the client's like, what do you mean? Like, we need to get ROI. We need to roll this out stat. And we're like, yeah, but if you want to create something remarkable could take 5 minutes, could take 5 weeks, could take 12 weeks. We don't know. We systemize as best we can and we bring in the parties we can and we've got it down to a really good rhythm. to create this space, and that's why we put so much effort into making our space a bit weird and eclectic and have Mortal Kombat in the foyer and just try to get people to break state and just do something different if they're getting stuck. It's like, if you're stuck on your project, just mix it up and come back to it. But yeah, branding has a weird way of revealing itself. So by the time this comes out, this would be with the client, so it's okay. But Luke, who you met out there, the art director, he was working with a fashion label, and they do this cool stitching. I think he was showing you the fabric of the stitching. And you know, this couple in the US, they're launching this fashion label, and one of them worked, you know, for like Levi's and these other big brands. He's launching his own label, and our team were trying to ideate what should the logo be, and his pattern motif is the stitching pattern. And Luke was like messing with that, and he's like, oh, it's not really working, and was trying and exploring different things. But when talking to the client, he realized that the heritage of the guy who started the company was from Latin America, and he loved Pegasus. He just thought Pegasuses were the coolest animal. He said they were regal as fuck. Like, he just thought they were cool. And Luke's like, maybe there's an opportunity to include a Pegasus in this. And he like peered into the background of the client on the Zoom call and noticed that there was like a Pegasus looking ornament on his fireplace. Mm-hmm. And Luke said, what's that? And he's like, oh, I've got one. And he went and brought it over. But in Latin America or South America, they have this thing that they do where they take different animal body parts and like put them together and create a new animal, just like as a knickknack mm-hmm. thing. They carve it out of wood and then they paint it, and it represents like creativity and putting things together. And, you know, I have like giraffe legs and Pegasus wings you know, like a rhino horn and it, like, yeah. But anyways, the weirdest thing about it was like Luke was kind of like live wondering on this call, like just kind of creatively flowing with it. And the client held it up to the screen and he created a silhouette of it, and it looks remarkable as a logo. You know, just like you can't plan that. Lovely. Like, it just happened on the call.
Yeah.
Other times, you know, the team will sit down and they'll draw 400 or 500 sketches until something happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, sometimes it'll happen in an instant. Sometimes, yeah, creativity is a weird one, man. It's like an elusive thing that you can't always force. It just has to arrive. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's really good. I think, and I can imagine everyone gets that place where you're looking for that idea, you're trying to find that idea, or I think that taste sometimes, and this is probably the hardest part, is sometimes it's done, you know, it is done, an idea, and that's okay. And other times you just know it's not. And I think that's the time when you keep going, it will come.
Mm.
Just have faith in the universe.
Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, for someone who's maybe starting a journey, like what would be some of your go-to like creative advice for an individual that has a sense that they want to go wandering? What advice would you have for them on that journey?
Wow. One of the most interesting things you can start to do is start from something you're curious about. So that you almost like you want to learn about it, and or you do know about it, or you want to learn more about it. And what is I always find interesting with this process is it always lends in more. You can go deep.
Right.
So and what I mean by that
is you can zoom in more. There's always more.
More. Yeah. You can always there's it's like the universe is so infinite.
It's like as above, so below. You know, if you look at the solar system and then you zoom into like nanos, fucking atoms.
Yeah.
Now my brain's wondering. Yeah, I see what you mean. There's always more. There's always deeper. There's always next.
Yeah. And I think, yeah. I think if you do that, and sometimes you lens up or lens down, I think it's a very interesting experience. The story I was going to share, and maybe this is probably, you know, I don't know. It could be instructive. It might not be, but is,
we're wondering.
Yeah. No, I think what's been really interesting is when we were, you know, building this game, so, you know, this arcade game, what's really interesting is that the actual game was built to show off another product we'd built.
Okay. So this NFT project is an arcade game?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So it's a game of Space Invaders to some extent. And then it has... Yeah. You have your own NFTs in it, and that's your ship, and it fires faster or slower or moves. And
okay,
it's a bit.
It's not a standard
it.
NFT project, by the sounds of it. It's very wildly fun. Creative. Yeah,
it taps into the core psychology as well of crypto, which is even more fun. But I think that's an interesting idea, right? So, what I wanted to share from that was I've gone really deep into crypto, and I thought I understood crypto. And the deeper and more technical I've got, the more layers I've unpacked, continuously going down further, I've realized that I didn't actually know crypto.
Right.
I didn't. I look at myself now and I go, I could literally look at an idea in crypto and go, that's going to work, that's not.
Yeah, it's
but
like when
now, you know, and I think that's when you're starting out, so to try and share.
Yeah.
If there's an area you think you understand, I can assure you now, if you just take a certain point of it. So let's say for example, you're a designer. Go and find a brush in Photoshop. Just click around.
Yeah.
And go and make something with it you've never clicked.
Yeah, right.
And you're forced to use that art.
Yeah.
You know, and then go and do, and then from that experience, you're like, oh, I can't quite. But then you're like, oh, that's interesting. And then you go back to the thing you were doing before. And you're like, oh, look at this technique that I had newly developed. And
you
now
attach it to something else.
And now you've got a brand new picture.
Right.
And I think that kind of...
It's like tree roots. You go down these different root systems.
Yeah.
And then you're like, maybe if I took this thing from skateboarding and brought it into finance.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if I brought in this idea from the NFT project into a venture capital partnership you're doing, or... Yeah, it's like connecting dots from different nodes that haven't connected before.
So I think that if you're starting out, just go and become and master and go deep on something. Go so deep, get focused, and then zoom back up and go, whoa, what did I learn? And then naturally, as a creative person, this is something which I think I did. I just recently went on a spiritual journey to New York by myself, which is, again, quite unusual.
When you say spiritual journey to New York, what do you mean?
So this is, again,
you just got on a flight.
How to explain
like,
this.
I'm going. Yeah.
I have 3.5 kids.
Yeah,
I say 0.5 because there's a fourth one coming.
Congratulations, man!
Thank you. I went for 2 weeks by myself. My partner's amazing. Both my former partner as well. They're both amazing people. Love them so much. And my ex-wife as well. We get along really, really well. Amazing person. She's amazing. Big shout out to Jess.
Shout out, Jess.
So I go to New York because when I've been to a lot of places in the world. And when I go there, my atoms or something aligns and I feel alive.
Just by being in that presence, in that space. Yeah.
I've been to a lot of, I've been to Korea, Hong Kong, London. Like I've been to a lot of, you can imagine a lot of cities, Paris, and everything, et cetera, around the world. I'm not saying I've been to every single place in the world and there's probably more spiritual places I could go. That place affects me in such a way where it grinds me down, makes me a tiny little humble ant.
Yeah.
And I look up and when I'm in that moment, this is what I do. And I think this is what's important for, I think, as again, a creative, is that inspiration comes from everywhere. So one of the things I did, I was walking along the street and I stopped and I was with my friend and I looked down at what anyone would consider trash. I said, look at that. And I picked this piece of trash up off the ground. And he's like, man, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I was like, look at it. And it was a Chinese menu. And it was like, really long filled with every, chicken, beef, pork that you could possibly combine with anything.
Yeah.
And you could order it from them right then and there.
Yeah.
And they'll deliver it to your door.
Wow, okay.
And it was massive. This menu was A3. Imagine, and tiny little writing with prices.
So anything you want.
Anything you wanted. Yeah. And they specifically explain it to you with every single dot point.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, like I'm talking tiny little 6-point font.
Wow.
And on the other side is specials. If you didn't have what you wanted on that side, I look at this and I was like, this is the most magical. Look at this artifact. This only could possibly exist in, look at this thing. Look, it's like the time it would have taken to go and invent and create and curate and
this Chinese menu.
Yeah, this Chinese menu. And it was so beautiful. It was like this, and I think that's where inspiration comes from everywhere. I took that and I was like, this is like back to the day. And I took an idea from that and I'm working on it.
Okay, hang on. So you you pick up a piece of what looks like trash. Yeah. In New York.
Spam, I guess.
Yeah. Where were you in New York?
I was literally walking on the street.
Suburb? Like what part?
I think I was in either Chinatown or Soho. I think it was in Soho.
Yeah.
And I was just walking up the street. I was literally the West Village. I was around there and I was it was leafy and there was just some trash on the side of the road and it had fallen off. And I looked and I went down and my friend was so puzzled at me. And, you know, he's staring at me going, and when are you, you know, pick up trash?
Right? Yeah. Like, what was it about it that enthralled you though? Like what?
It was just this artifact of someone had like put an immeasurable amount of time to create something into a piece of paper that would explain the service level that we would be prepared to go to as a restaurant to deliver to you what you want.
Yeah. It wasn't like
the in a physical representation.
They went all out.
All out.
Yeah.
Like it's like a diner menu, you know, like that level. Yeah. But like in China, like in every single, you know, you want garlic sauce, oyster sauce, like it is like everything.
Yeah.
And I took it back to our sign team and I presented it to them and they were like, this is an artifact of magic.
Yeah.
In they any other city, like you brought that back from someone, they go, what are you bringing this here for?
But your team loved it. They're like, we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like we've got an idea that's being built off this, which is, I'm telling you, this idea is very zany.
This is wandering to the max.
Yeah. So I think what I'm trying to, you know, what I'm trying to submit is that ideas for your creativity come in all forms or formats. And it's important just to be open to receiving.
Yeah.
And because you don't know in what format, shape, you know, that'll come. Mm-hmm. So, another one, I stand on the front of this bagel shop waiting for it to open. It's called Russ and Daughters. It's an old sort of bagel, you know, smoked salmons and stuff. Been rebooted, really beautiful. Sort of counters and it's just really nice, you know, they dress up nice. And I was standing in the line and I looked over and I saw this building and on the outside of the building, they painted their offers. So it's like best rates on, you know, nylon and this and we have the finest silks from here, here and here. And I'm like, well, that's commitment.
Yeah. To paint.
To paint it on your building.
Yeah.
You're like, we're not gonna need to make good because we're gonna be here for a long time. Yeah. So we're gonna paint this on.
Yeah.
It's much cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thinking, right?
And it's different. It gets your attention, right? Because if they just like vinyl printed it, you're like boring.
Whatever. Yeah, like you could just take it, tear it down, whatever. Yeah. Like they painted on the building.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, that's the level. I mean, I took a photo of this.
Yeah,
sent it to my friend again, and he was like, this is the creativity because that is the strangest thing because inside that building is an art show I just went to. You just literally took the photo of the art show. And it's an incredible show that you must go and see. It was the most amazing. It was a Porsche being taken apart and put back together live.
Wow.
And he said, I can't believe you sent a photo of that. And it's kind of like those two punctuation marks sort of came together.
Yeah.
In a weird kind of serendipitous way. He's like, how did you take that photo? And doesn't make sense.
So much serendipity. Like how did that?
And so that's the kind of energy, man, like in that city for me where I accidentally, you know, I pick up trash or I take a photo of a building I see or I look at like the way a shop is designed and or the way in which like the words in which someone has used to express themselves and then deliver something or there's just a whole series of notions and concepts and ideas in that city for me that is it just sends me on like different polygons where I'm like, oh, that's an interesting, I got to put that into the mix. That I don't know how that came about, but let's put that in some way. And it's endless.
Yeah.
It is literally endless.
Yeah.
Like it is like, you cannot like cover that many streets and shops and experience it. It's just too many.
Yeah.
So the creativity for me is like a fountain of curiosities continuously exists. Like how does this shop, these tiny little shops that I went to this shop, this guy, like literally I lived two streets away.
Yeah.
And I went and had like coffee with this guy, this another creative guy. He works for LeBron's agency.
Okay.
And he was like, you know, sports agency. And I'm like, cool. And he goes, man, like I go, where's a good sandwich around here? he goes, man, like you should go two streets up from here. And I'm like, there, man. Like I live two streets, you know, like I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
I go up two streets. I'd never seen this place before.
Yeah.
Never.
Because everything's so compact.
Everywhere.
Everything's on top of each other, yeah.
And I'm like, there's no way. How can this random sandwich shop survive?
Yeah.
I turn up, right? And they won't let me in. I'm like, bruh.
Sandwich mafia, man.
Like, I come with money. This is America. You exchange money for goods here.
Yeah.
And services. This is how it works.
Fuck, man. It must have been a good sandwich.
They close the doors till 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? Anyway, so I'm standing up at the front. I'm like, I ain't moving. Some people come along. They try and take my spot. They realize, oh, he's queued up. It's a big line. iPhone queue starts forming behind me.
Yeah.
I'm like, what have I... Like, I live two streets away. Yeah. It's not like it's like, you know, I'm and so, you know, I'm like, what is... And the reason why it survived is because they'd found a combination, you know, in the universe and the vast array of things to combine together still onto a sandwich.
Yeah.
To reinvent the sandwich.
That's a lot.
And a lot have pressure. An iPhone queue.
Yeah.
There are a lot of sandwiches being sold in New York City.
Yep.
And yet they have a queue. How is that possible?
Yeah.
That's the curiosities. That's.
Did that drive you nuts sitting in line? Like, what the fuck is it?
I was like, that's like nothing special about a shop. I was like, the menu's pretty simple.
Yeah.
It looks red. I guess that's good. And well, these people really want to get in. Well, that's kind of cool. All right. And I'm looking at the menu. I was staring at the menu and I could not figure out what to order.
Yeah.
That was the most frustrating part. I'm like, I think this.
That's too much pressure.
Yeah. Normally, you know, you go to something.
Yeah.
That's the taste thing, you know. Like, I'm like, oh, it's definitely the 7.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, it's the 1. Oh, it's the 14. And you go back to your phone, working on your computer these days.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, wait, I got to figure out the sandwich decision. And I was like, 17. For now, I did it multiple times. I'm talking like at least 7 adventures into their menu to the point where I gave up. I was like, I walked in and I was like, okay, man, tell me, what's the sandwich house? What am I ordering?
Yeah.
What's the thing? He's like, man, it's this one or this one. And I'm like, okay, I'll go with that one. Anyway, so I'm like, oh man, this has got pistachio on it.
Yeah.
Pistachio paste. I'm like, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm like looking at this thing and all these ingredients. Anyway, so he gives me the sandwich and I'm looking at it and it's quite enormous. You know, and it's $20. I'm like, that's a solid sandwich. You know, it's $30 Australian. I'm like, that's Jesus. A sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. The bread had come out from the oven and it was piping. It was like still steaming a bit. They like painted it a bit. Fresh made
bread.
And it was like focaccia. It wasn't like a normal bread you'd ever seen. I was like, oh, look at this. They've got a new dimension here.
Yeah.
They've tapped into different polygons of a sandwich. It's like they've clearly gone on an adventure into the bread territory. Again,
they've wandered into bread.
Yeah, they've wandered down and gone
so far down those.
Yeah, lines. Like what makes bread? What's normal? What's not? Okay, let's keep going. Let's go meet some bakers. Then adventure. Till they got to this point, they went, we make our bread like this.
Yeah.
And no one would understand where that came from because they've gone over that many hills and that many places and towns that you've never been. And you're like, okay, I didn't think bread could taste like that. And then, so this is the level. I got this sandwich and again, I talk about a sandwich. But
I'm loving it, man. I'm like, fuck yeah, tell me about
the
sandwich.
I got it in the subway, right? Yeah. And this sandwich is hot. It's come out, you know, and it's got like this stuff on it. You know, I'm like, oh, man, I think they put like some broccoli on there or something. And I'm like, why did you put broccoli on my sandwich? I'm like, I chose the wrong one. Should have gone for the 14. I went, well, anyway, I go to the office and I take the sandwich out. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm pretty hungry. It's, you know, I've had a meeting and then, you know, you caught a subway up, you know, got into the office and I'm like, okay, you know, we're on 31st Street and it's midtown. It's a pretty punchy area.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go upstairs, I sit down, I sit in the middle of the office and I take the sandwich out and the first person comes across and goes, man, what is that sandwich? I'm like, oh, it's this joint. It's two streets up from me. And it's like, well, I can smell that sandwich from over there.
Yeah.
And then someone else was like, man, what's that sandwich you got there? I can smell that sandwich. When they come over and they're like inspecting the sandwich.
Yeah. What did this thing look like?
I'm like, it's like a, you know, it's a focaccia and it has like this bread, but then they had this sort of, I'm not sure what the words are that this type of cheese, again, they've gone down cheeses and found the cheeses that when it combines together on the bread, it melts in such a way that it lights up the pistachio nuts and then the somehow the ham talks to it and then literally the entire office stopped and went, man, what? Like, and to give you, like, let me just give you the level.
Yeah.
So in our office, we let everyone order lunch every day for free.
Cool. They
like,
love that.
They all have Seamless. And they can all they got $20 and they can order whatever they want.
Wow.
And so everyone comes in.
We do that on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
But I love that you do it every day.
Every day. So everyone just orders whatever they want.
That's so cool.
And so literally everyone's like, where is that on Seamless? I'm like, I don't know. I'll show you. And I couldn't even pronounce the name of the shop. I'm like, this is the level, right? And so everyone tried to order a sandwich then. Like, you know. But this, you know, that's the level, right? That I think what's instructive, or I hope what you can take from that is, and trying to go back to your question and share is, you know, you got to go real deep.
Yeah.
And find the alpha down.
Yep.
And it exists. It's just how far are you prepared to go? Like, yeah. Are you prepared to go past where anyone else has been? And I think that's what Elon does with batteries, right? He goes to the fundamental chemicals of, you know, cobalt and magnesium and how those two things, yeah. Well, that's probably the wrong metals, by the way, but how do they actually combine together with the acid and how much should go in and why do we do it that way? Why yeah. can't we try and do it this way? And then suddenly he has a whole new innovation that no one else has.
Yeah. And I think talk about it one time. He was saying, like, when he was building one of the SpaceX rockets, he said when he was designing the rocket, they went right down to the incremental details, like zooming in on those lenses. Like, why do we build rockets like that? It's like, oh, well, that's what engineering teaches us. Well, what if the engineering's wrong? He was kind of like, question everything. Like, let's just, it seems like he's kind of got that wandering knack. Steve Jobs had it.
Can I share another one?
Yeah.
Another one. Sorry, this is probably...
the sandwich one, man. I love that.
The sandwiches. Yeah. I seek sandwiches as well, by the way. It's one of those things. There's a good sandwich shop on York Street. By the way, I've renamed York Street in Sydney.
Okay.
It's called New York Street from now on.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a brand new street.
Cool, man.
Greatest street in Sydney.
Yeah.
New York Street. I'm putting new signs on the front of all
little stickers.
Yeah.
Little hash.
Yeah. So there's a guy, I don't know if everyone, and this is probably another instructive story, I think, and something which I found very instructive, and it's the same spirit of this, is there's a guy called Edwin Land. Again, someone that Accio admired and sort of Steve admire. There's kind of like, I think it goes like this. It goes Steve, Accio, Edwin Land, Henry Ford, and then Thomas Edison.
This sounds like kind of like a lineage thing. Like, yeah. You've got Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, Earl Schoaf, Dale Carnegie. Kind of like,
yes,
yeah. It's like a passed down thing. Yeah.
So Edwin Land made Polaroid.
Oh, okay.
You know, the instant photographs.
Mm. Right.
So here's the thing, and just like will turn you like it'll just puzzle you. He made that in 1949.
No. So early, dude. What? That's like just after the war.
Just after the war. Like terrible depression. So he invited the journalists over, right?
How the fuck?
And he sat there with there's a famous photo, you can probably bring it up, of him just sitting there with a photograph of himself, black and white.
Yeah.
Instantly printed. Like, everyone, it's the first selfie, right? You know, instant selfie.
When was the printer invented? That's like pre-printer, man.
Pre. Like, what? this is like...
I didn't know it was that early.
Right.
Yeah.
So literally, he invited the journalists over, you know, New York Times, and he took a photo of himself, and everyone went, oh, they were so shocked and so enamored that everyone assumed that he was a magician. Like, right. He was of the paranormal world.
Yeah.
This is not possible.
It's witchcraft.
Literally.
It's 1949, man. No one has that technology yet.
Yeah. Like, there's no internet.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Like, even if you think about engineering back then, like, you didn't have the internet. If you wanted to learn something, you had to go to the library or you had to interview someone and read blueprints. Like, you couldn't just Google, how do I do X? Mm. Yeah.
So I think what I wanted to share with that story, the way Edwin Land started out, he had this theory. I think this might be instructive. So this is, you know, just to build on your story. The way he started was, he said, I don't want to do anything anyone's ever done before. And he thought about, how am I going to do that? He said, well, I'm going to learn about light and I'm going to learn everything there is to know about light. So in his local library, he went and read every book on light.
Wow.
Every book.
Yeah.
Then he moved to New York City. He didn't have a job. I think he was just, you know, doing all sorts of weird and wacky things. He went to the New York Library and he read every book on light in the New York Library. Like, literally read them all. Yeah,
all of them.
All of them. Every single one.
Yeah.
Until then he was like, okay, I need to go and get more knowledge. So he would break into the university and borrow their books, the University Library. He wasn't at university. Yeah. And he would steal the book, read it, put it back, and then take the next one and read again every book on light.
Yeah.
Until such point that he was now at the forefront of light, and its comprehension of human understanding.
Yeah.
He was the oracle of understanding light and how we understood light and how it interacted and how, and all forms of it.
He went down every lens.
All the way down.
Yeah.
That's a nice line, I like that.
Yeah. That's your content. You could, yeah.
That's well played. And so then he said, okay, now I'm going to go, now that I understand where we're up to.
Yeah.
And this is, again, this creative process that I encourage to go in terms of going deeper, I think, is he then went, okay, now I'm going to go and start creating. He stopped reading because he'd read it all.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, now I think there's something here. And he started to go and invent. And the first thing he invented was, so back then when there's a lot of military going on, one was goggles. So if you noticed in the war, there's a famous one, the general, I can't remember his name, right? The famous American one, he's got the goggles on his head and they're Polaroid lensed.
Oh, okay.
So they could see when on the battlefield,
yeah,
when others couldn't.
Wow, yeah. Remember another reading one, a little bit about that, and that they gave him a huge advantage.
Huge.
Like turn to war almost advantage, yeah.
Cars, when they drive on the road, we take it for granted now, but you know the headlights when they shine in your eyes, the actual windscreen wasn't tinted.
Yeah.
And you just get blinded and just huge numbers of accidents would happen. He built that thing. And these are all inventions that were kind of interesting and not, unfortunately or fortunately for us, weren't that adopted.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he was, you know, back then, you know, Mr. Kodak, Mr. Eastman, by the way, built that thing in the 1800s. Another one that never, you know, just to give you, you know, Kodak, he was a pioneer.
Yeah.
1800s. Henry Ford was 1901, the combustion, you know, engine and stuff. So 1800s, that's hectic.
Mental. Yeah.
And by the way, another thing for everyone, I think it's another important note of history, which I just find puzzling. I think Napoleon sort of left the stage around 1840.
Like Bonaparte?
Yeah.
1840.
He was still, man, that guy.
Kodak was pre-Napoleon.
Kodak and Napoleon were like.
What the fuck?
There's like, I don't know when they crossed over or how they crossed over exactly, but yeah. But these people, the 1800s is a very interesting time. So I just want to give that, I think it's important to understand the speed and velocity in which we exist in now.
Yeah.
And think of the creativity that was happening before and now the number of people who are creating and why it's so intense. Like there are mini Napoleons right now. Yeah. If there wasn't a whole, like all this technology levels the playing field to some extent.
Yeah, yeah.
There are Napoleons still going on.
Like homogenizes the world.
Yeah, makes the bar just ridiculously high.
Yeah.
It's just ChatGPT to everything.
Yeah, there's geniuses everywhere. It's just like
there are, you know, and they're political. They know how to mastermind stuff. I just wanted to share that. That still exists. Just it's not as prodigious and rare. So I think what I wanted to share from that is, he was on a hike with his daughter.
Yeah. The Polaroid guy.
So Edwin Land. He was on this hike and his daughter went to him and they was like, hey, let's take a photo, Dad.
Yeah.
And they took a photo. And back then, you remember Mr. Kodak, Mr. Eastman, you would put film into a camera, click the button, expose the light.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to basically use up all the film and then wait. You waited for your
weeks.
You wait for your photos.
Yeah,
wait. Imagine kids these days waiting for your photos.
Yeah, yeah. I can't post it now.
So,
yeah.
So his daughter turned to him and went, "Hey, Dad, why do we have to wait?" And he went, "Well, you know, we need to go and expose the camera and then the light, and then we need to go and do this." And he was like, "Oh," and that just sent him on this journey
because he knew about light and he just knew
all about light.
Yeah,
he knew all about exposure and chemicals, and then he went so deep and he invented the Polaroid in 1940.
Incredible. Huh. That's spooky. And I think that there's so much learning in just this one thing. You know how people are always trying to find like what's the silver bullet, what's the one thing? I think like, man, wandering is probably as close as you're going to get to it. Mm. And I think every time I talk to people in business, they're kind of doing this. Mm. No one's articulated it before. Like this has really hit me, man. This has opened up a channel in my mind that I'm like, that's fascinating. It's really remarkable that you see the world that way. And now I'm jealous. I want to go to New York and experience sandwiches, but fuck, man. Because I think, yeah, it's so true. Like you just have to, like that's the joy of life is to wonder. I think, you know, maybe how much of the pressure of society puts a framework on how we meant to live. You know, we go to school, we go into the system and all the rest of it. And it's just like, maybe we're just meant to be wandering a lot more in life. Yeah. Just listening and observing more and just, yeah, like you said with the Chinese menu, I get what you mean. Like I'll see something and it'll inspire me.
Yeah.
Like a little thing. I'm like, oh, that signage is cool. Oh, fucking logo is cool. Like every time someone comes here and gets a job as a designer or even on another team, they come in as a copywriter, but they just hear about logo design all the time. Then they start noticing logos. They're like, I can't look at that. Who designed that? Like, it, you know, it's like going into the matrix. It's almost like when you see the world a different way, you change your lens, you change your peripherals, your location, but then you pay attention and you listen and you wait and things arrive. And you find that as kind of your muse to find where you should be spending your time. Mm. Are you more spiritual now than you have been in the past? Are you leaning more into this? Because you mentioned that this wasn't comfortable for you initially, but now it is.
Yeah, I think in so much that I started to really embrace this inside myself. I think in the past, it could have been seen as wasting time.
Okay. But now you're embracing it.
Now I'm like, if they're, you know, just like the sandwich, you know, adventure.
Yeah.
I will go on other, you know, journeys where I'm called to go and do that.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go down to the rabbit hole of whatever that is. And I don't know why I'm going there. And I unfortunately don't have a business plan for you or couldn't tell you where this connects in. And sometimes it doesn't. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the ideas don't work out. And that's really hard.
What you said, man, really clicked in my head just now. Like it really has. Like it's, I've had like a lightning bolt moment just now with this whole, like these awesome stories you're telling. And, but yeah, it's a business is so much more than the actionable steps.
Definitely. And the, you know, what I admire now, and I'll see someone really trying, you know, or I watch a movie and they're failing. And what I admire, and I don't know if this is instructive, but I hope it is when people push past that unbelievable torrent and sticky mud that's in your way of creating and get so proactive and take so much responsibility that they get that creative.
Mm.
They have that problem as well. And yet they take that responsibility. They take that responsibility as well. And they take that one on and get so creative.
Yeah.
That's where those magical things come from.
Yeah. Cause it's so funny, man. Like when you said that, like my mind immediately goes into, like I'll be on a call now with a client or in this room. We do workshops in this room at this table here. And the client will say one thing and my brain just goes like through a bunch of different, like these guys have sat in the workshops. Yeah. I'll be working back and forth with the client, trying to get them to unpack, just getting them to open up and kind of share their ideas creatively. They're like maybe a law firm and they care about these things and they're trying to, or maybe a new service, product, business, whatever it is. But they'll say one thing and my mind just fires. I'm like, that's it. I get goosebumps and I know what to do with the brands. Like, and I don't know if it'll be in the first minute, first hour, week six, but at some point I'll click and I won't be able to sleep. And my mind just, it's not even my business. And I'm just going on this wild creative journey, like a drug trip. I'm like, man, imagine the branding and if the color palette was this and we said the tagline like that, like I just get to go on this exhilarating journey. And for me, it's so weird because I don't know where that comes from. And you can read the books and you can read the academia and you can do the research, you can do the target marketing, but I've gone so many lenses deep on branding. Like you saw the library out there. I've read all the books on marketing and branding and I've run out of books to read and I'm finding other ways to dive in and pull it out. But you're right. It gets to this certain point where you think you figured it out and then you're like, nah, there's probably a few more lenses and you go in a little bit deeper and you're like, I didn't know jack shit a year ago, but now I've got to figure it out. Right. And then you're like, let me just dive a little bit deeper now. And then you're like, man, I didn't know shit a year ago, but now I've got to figure it out. You keep going and every single 3 or 4 months, I'm like, I didn't know jack shit about branding like 3 months ago, but now I've got to figure it out. Yeah. But now I've learned that I'm never going to figure it out because branding is such a big thing. It's so attached to culture. It's so attached to design. It's so attached to language and language evolves. It's just a technology's coming in. AI is coming in. It's just, yeah, you're right, man. You kind of have to get comfortable as an entrepreneur just being okay with that.
Mm.
Like you're not going to have all the answers. You're not going to know the outcome. You're not going to know the finish line.
No.
You just need to start wandering.
And it can wandering can it can be annoying for some people, you know. Like,
I get it, man.
They just don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
They're not up for that.
Yeah, I drive my team nuts sometimes, dude. They're like, where is this shit coming from? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
And then you know, you gotta also know that you're a powerful force of energy and a catalyst. And then sometimes you need to also not be that.
Yeah.
For it to percolate, the process to happen, for inquiry, qualification, data. There are parts that, you know, there's that genesis, and then there is almost it's like you can't have, you need the other part as well. And that's why I think I've taken a long time to admire and find people who are comfortable with me being like that as well.
Mm.
And I had this coach, and he said, I came to him one day, I said, man, okay, this year I'm going to become a better manager. I'm going to become a better leader. I'm going to get way better at this. I decided I'm going to adapt to people's personalities and start to, like, really, you know, speak really to them and, you know, like, have the right things to say in a certain periods of time. And I'm going to work really hard at this and become really good at it. He said, Fred, I've been sitting in front of you for 7 years, and this is the worst idea I've heard you ever.
He's like, I know,
like,
you, man.
I'm like, the worst. Yeah. Whoa, that's. Yeah. There's been a lot of bad stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. Like, yeah. Please, just go and find people who wanna work with you, man, and you just be yourself.
Yeah. Well.
Because, like, you know, like, you just, that's, you're good.
Yeah,
you just need to go and find some other people. Like,
that's so true, man. Because it's
I think that's what you got on your team. You know, it feels like that. You got
these guys get me, man. Yeah,
yep.
These guys, both these guys. So Dennis and Cam have been my muse for writing my book. I'll feel like I'm in a rabbit hole. I'm like, I don't know what I'm writing about anymore. And they're like, no, man, this is good. This is you. That's not really you, bro. Really need to rewrite that.
Yeah.
You know, it's so important to surround yourself with crew that they know who you are, they accept you where you're at, and there's no judgment, there's no ridicule. Like, one thing we've worked really hard on here at Rival is just creating a culture where there is no judgment. Mm. Like, this is a safe space. And these guys know they can call me out on my shit, and they do. Like, both of these guys, what was it, Monday? Sat me down, and you're like, you need to start writing your fucking book. I'm like, roger that. Let's go in the room now. Thank you.
I'm grateful.
You know, so many people can't do that with their team. They can't do that. And it's just, it's important, man. You're right. Because when you're a CEO or you're starting an idea, I think we constantly make ourselves malleable to those around us. But I think when you're trying to drive and create, it's too much. Mm. Like, it's too much to adapt yourself and create in a way. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to loosen yourself up and be you to create.
So I think, if I can build on this and maybe share, this is where I've learned something. Again, this is a very raw idea. So I've never spoken about this, and it's something which I've only sort of discovered. What I try and do now, because I sort of worked on this idea, and I said, like, okay, well, you know, clearly I'm going to be creating a lot of stuff, and I need to get, like, a lot of things communicated to other people, and it's really important that they understand the ideas as well. Is I actually made it my challenge to be more creative in how other people can understand what I'm thinking. So it's not if they don't get it. It's like, well, you didn't. I'm going to take even more responsibility, go over and above, even further, and go, I didn't do a good enough job communicating.
Yeah.
How can I get more creative? What do I need to do in order to expand? And, like, and so all the time, what I'm trying to do now is point the finger at myself and go, hey, can you tell me what I can do to improve in order to make this happen? Because I think I failed at doing that, and we didn't get there. And in fact, this is the line I use, which is probably very, you know, I think this might be instructive. Is I said, like, I'm sorry, I feel I've let us down, and I haven't quite got us to this place with this idea and where I'd like us to get to. And I take responsibility for that because of this, and this. And I haven't been able to communicate it well enough. So, hey, can you give me some feedback on how I could improve or what I could have done to get better at communicating this and bringing this about so that it can happen?
Mm.
And it's like, hey, man, well, you just didn't write that down. It's like, oh, it's true. I didn't. Okay, next time I'm going to write it down.
Yeah.
Hey, you didn't call a meeting and bring everyone together and explain your idea. That's true. I could have done that better.
Yeah.
Thank you. Like, you know, and so I've learned this sort of this process now where I really try to write things down, then host a meeting, share it, ask for feedback, and then really start to bring people in on these ideas a lot earlier. And it feels more uncomfortable because, like you said, you're in this creative journey and this process, and you're so alive, and it almost feels like you're only just giving birth to it. It's only just alive.
Yeah, you don't want to share it yet.
Yeah, it's not ready yet. And so it's like, well, actually, so what I've learned to do is get really uncomfortable and put it into a thing. And by the process of creating and documenting,
yeah,
what actually happens is that you get clear in yourself.
Right, because you're forcing yourself to articulate it.
Yeah, and like when you go and get it, you got an idea and you like just vomit it out.
Yeah.
And it kind of like, oh, that makes sense to me. And everyone's looking at it going, oh, I think it looks like a vomit, man. Like,
yeah. So doing it early forces you to go, that didn't land. Let me go work on it.
Draw it. And then go even further. Get more proactive. Go and make it, so if it's a piece of code these days, I go and like make a spreadsheet, do it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm stuck in, or I draw a diagram or get mid-journey to make a picture about it or, I need to write a story. I'll ask, ChatGPT to like write something together. But I've written the sort of fundamentals that will make that. And then I present it and go, hey, this is what it could be like.
Yeah.
So what I've been thinking about is if you want to become more prodigious in your creativity, you need to get a higher bandwidth of communication. You don't want a dial-up modem of bits and bytes. You want like full spectrum, like
quantum computing.
Yeah, like satellite bombers coming out, like, and it's like multi like channels.
Yeah,
and you're just like it's all organized that someone can just pick up, digest, and then like ingest, and then like read all these bits, and if they wanted to, and it's as much as a little they want, and that's sort of how I was trying to build on your idea. How am I starting to improve myself to be a better creative? What I'm trying to do is be more creative in how I communicate.
Right. Because that quote where it's like you can share something with someone, but you can't understand it for someone.
Mm.
But you're kind of challenging that. You're like, can I? Yeah. Like that little girl asking her dad, like, why can't you?
Mm.
You're like, there's a way I can communicate this. Let me push. It's almost like when you hear that thought in your head, can't, you're like, hang on, if I just flip that, what if I did?
Mm.
Yeah,
that leads to very creative places.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
that's nice.
Exactly. Yeah, because it seems from my point of view that you guys are like conductor.
Yeah,
so that's where you seem to thrive. How you even saying like a wandering conductor, you go to one place, you conduct, you get everyone in the place you need to be, and you're like, all right, I'm just gonna go do it there now, and just keep going from place to place, and you're like, what's the best I can do in my role? And how can I best get them to understand what I need them to do?
Mm.
And then you just move on. You just keep moving on.
I feel like you just created Fred, a two-word brand.
The Wandering Conductor.
Wandering Conductor.
That's good.
That describes you, man.
That's good. I like that.
From my experience today.
That's good.
I don't fully.
That's a great place to end it. That's a great place to end it.